lot of people think that happiness is something that sort of feels good, that it, that happiness is about pleasure. But it turns out, I mean, hundreds of studies now show you're going to be healthier. Lots of research shows that happier people are healthier. They have stronger immune systems. They recover faster from surgeries. They live longer. And happy people are also more productive at work. They show more creativity. So yeah, so happiness also benefits, you know, other areas of your life.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. This is Ben Morton, and welcome to episode 46 of the show. In this episode, we are talking about how a focus on happiness can improve productivity, our leadership capability, effectiveness in negotiations, and countless other benefits for individuals and businesses with Professor Sonia Lyubomirsky. Professor Lyubomirsky is a Russian-born American professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of California. She's also the author of the bestseller, The How of Happiness, A Scientific Approach to Getting the Life You Want, which is a book of strategies backed by scientific research that can be used to increase happiness. Sonia is also an associate editor of the Journal of Positive Psychology and is frequently quoted in news articles about positive psychology and happiness. I'm absolutely delighted that we managed to secure Sonia as a guest for the podcast, and she joins us for this short episode that really does pack a weighty scientific punch, folks. In the short time that we had, we were able to explore and talk about what determines our happiness, some strategies for improving happiness, and some of the benefits to us as individuals and to organisations. And if that wasn't enough, I also asked her about the links between happiness and COVID-19, as well as what we can be doing as leaders to smoothly and effectively start welcoming people back to our physical places of work. So, without any further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Professor Sonia Lyubomirsky. Sonia, a very warm welcome to the podcast. I'm delighted to have you with us, especially as I know I think you've just rushed straight off of the virtual stage in a Q&A session, right?
Hi, Ben, and it's a pleasure to talk to you, but I'm all warmed up talking about happiness.
Amazing. So, Sonia, I've heard you speak at a conference a few years ago and then immediately picked up and read your book, The How of Happiness, which I highly recommend to every listening. And the fact that I'd actually made so many notes in the margins and highlighted so many sections really made preparing for our conversation today an absolute dream. So with that in mind, let's dive straight in. One of the things I read early on in the book was the fact that you don't particularly like the phrase, the pursuit of happiness. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and why?
The pursuit of happiness makes it seem like there's like something that you're pursuing, like that there's just like something out there, like this goal, like a shiny object that you're kind of following and pursuing. And I guess I think of happiness as something that's really inside of you. It can backfire when it's too like direct a pursuit, right? Like, because when you keep reminding yourself like, oh, I want to be happier. Oh, am I happy yet? Am I happy yet? You monitoring your happiness, right? That could actually detract from your happiness. That could actually certainly detract from living in the moment. Happiness is better as a byproduct of something as opposed to like something you're pursuing that you may actually not be satisfied enough with if you don't reach your kind of level of happiness that you desire. So yeah, kind of better to focus on other things, like focus on being grateful or focus on connecting with others or focus on physical exercise or meditation or whatever you're doing to become happier. And then happiness will be kind of a byproduct of that.
Yeah, because I guess if we turn happiness into a goal, as you was alluding to there, sort of if we reach the goal, kind of we just move the goal a bit further away, right? And want to be more happy. So it almost can become something that we never really get to or experience. Is that the idea?
It's kind of happiness has this interesting characteristic that like if we set a kind of a standard, like I want to be this happy, I want to be a 6 out of 7, but we don't quite reach that. We're a 5.8. That's going to actually make us less happy. So actually our goal will be even farther from being met. But the other one is what you're saying is what we're talking about really is what's called the hedonic treadmill, which is where you reach a goal and you're like, okay, this is great. But then after a short while, then you're not satisfied with it anymore. Now you seek an even higher goal. Now, in lots of domains, that's actually not a bad thing. You know, you could argue human beings would never sort of make progress if we were just sort of, you know, resigned to like kind of any kind of goal, right? And we sort of stagnate. So it is good that we keep pursuing new and sort of better goals or, you know, further goals. But with happiness, you can sort of end up on this hedonic treadmill and then you're never really happy.
Yeah, that hedonic treadmill is something I really want to come to and ask you about shortly. But I guess probably there's a question we should ask before that, which is, so what does sort of determine our level of happiness? There was a interesting sort of pie chart I saw in your book. Can you kind of talk to us a little bit about that?
Well, the pie chart, I should say, has often been misinterpreted. So I'll kind of be careful in how I explain this. So basically, the idea is when people ask, like, what are the determinants of happiness? I think that there's kind of three main determinants or kind of three main buckets of kind of determinants or influences on happiness. So one is genetics. And so we all know some people are happier than others. They're sort of born happier than others. They're sort of naturally happier. It's easier for them to be happier. So genetic influences are definitely important to consider. So that's one kind of bucket of determinants of happiness. Another one involves your life circumstances, right? So like where you live and how healthy you are, and are you married, and how much money do you make, and, you know, what do you do? So those are your life circumstances, which also matter to happiness. Now, they matter more when they're like really bad or really good than if they're just kind of like in the middle. So that's the second kind of bucket of influences on happiness. And the third bucket of influences on happiness has to do with sort of how you think and how you behave in your daily life. And so those are the things that you're more likely to be able to control, right? Sort of like you can kind of decide, I'm going to behave or think in a different way today than I did yesterday. And so there's a element of sort of control there for your happiness. So but anyway, that's how I think about happiness, as kind of there's genetic influences that you're influenced by your circumstances or your situation that you find yourself in. And the third is you're influenced by how you think and how you behave every day.
How much of our happiness is within our control and influence versus kind of how much is genetics, for example?
I don't want to put a number on it. I guess I would just say that there is a lot of our happiness that's under our control. So I can't tell you exactly how much, but let's just say it's a lot, and it's enough that we should, if you want to become happier, there's something you can definitely do something about it.
And what are some of those things? What are some of the ideas or concepts that we can play around with that stand a good chance of shifting our level of happiness?
Yeah, great question. So I've devoted about 20 to 30 years of my career studying this. And so basically there's lots of practices or activities that people can engage in that can boost their happiness. Now, what that practice or activity is depends on your personality, on your lifestyle, and your goals and values. Although some are probably more kind of, quote, universally useful for people. And those activities involve things like expressing gratitude on a regular basis, which helps us not take things for granted in our lives. Doing acts of kindness for others, helping others, has been found in lots of studies to be important to happiness. Savoring the good things in our days, like really extracting the maximum positive emotion from our experiences, is important. Pursuing goals that are meaningful and important is important to happiness. So all of those things might sort of shift our happiness to higher levels.
One of the things that I found interesting to say, I first read your book a couple of years ago and then picked it up in the last week and have been rereading it. And if I remember rightly, from when I first picked it up, there was a sort of exercise in there that suggests some particular types of activities that might be useful to you in improving your happiness. And when I did that, there were certain activities that almost I think I dismissed as kind of just didn't seem to fit with me or didn't seem right. But interestingly, I picked it up and there's a couple in there that I absolutely know I dismissed the first time round. That looking at it now, I think, do you know what? That's exactly what I need to be doing. I don't know if that comes from sort of greater self-awareness on my behalf, but things like kind of savoring and forgiveness and ruminating less seemed really, really important to me now, whereas they weren't in the past. Is that quite common, or kind of, do you wonder if you've got anything to add to that experience I've had?
So that is very interesting. The fitting activities, like the sort of the fitting practices that might work for you at one time of your life might change at a different time. And I mean, that's not surprising, right? Because we all change. people? And how, what's the period of time that you're talking about?
It's probably just less than 2 years.
Oh, so not very long. Yeah, that's very interesting. I've never actually tested the reliability. I would guess that for most people, they're fairly similar. Certainly when I've done this kind of diagnostic myself, even like 15 years ago, there are very similar activities that I feel like I would enjoy and find meaningful and find, you know, natural and valuable to do are the same ones. So yeah, but I think for some people they are going to change. So yeah, very, very interesting. And actually you've given me an idea for a future study.
Wow. That's great to hear. I wanted to also link back to what you mentioned a few minutes ago around this idea of the hedonic treadmill. I mean, I learned the term hedonic adaptation from hearing you speak on stage or your book, which again was really interesting for me and really resonated, because at the point I heard that, I'd been completing a sort of morning gratitude practice probably for 5-6 years. And literally at that point that I read that, I was starting to wonder, like, was this really having any impact anymore? Was it still useful? And then I read about hedonic treadmill, hedonic adaptation. So just expand on that a little bit more for us and kind of what happens and what goes on there.
Sure. I mean, hedonic adaptation, I'll just use that term. It's a very important phenomenon actually to keep in mind if you're trying to pursue happiness, or really just for anyone to understand their happiness. So basically, hedonic adaptation is basically the phenomenon that human beings are remarkably good at getting used to changes in their lives, especially positive changes. So at first we buy a new car, we earn a new relationship, we get a new job, we move somewhere, we get a handbag. You know, at first, you know, that gives us a boost, maybe a small boost or a big boost in happiness. But after time, we tend to kind of return back to our original happiness level. And so that it really presents a huge challenge to happiness sort of research, or to happiness interventions, because if we adapt or get used to almost any positive change in our lives, then how can we ever become happier, right? So it's sort of a challenge. But there are ways, I guess the next sort of question or things that we might want to discuss is sort of how do we try to slow down or preclude that adaptation? So for example, so I'm a runner, right? So I try to run a lot. So, but if I run the exact same way every day, then I adapt to it. And so I just kind of find it monotonous and, like, you know, I don't look forward to it. I sort of don't want to do it anymore. And so one way to sort of preclude or slow down adaptation is to spice things up, right? Just do things with sort of more variety, more novelty, more surprise. And that applies to lots of activities, including sort of happiness practices, right? So if you do acts of kindness and that makes you happier, but if you do the same, like, you know, you put money in someone's parking meter, you know, whatever, you know, once a week, at first that gives you a boost, and then it's going to stop giving you a boost over time. Does that make sense? And so you want to kind of spice up your happiness activities so that you try to slow down adaptation to them.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So again, I think you use this in the book. So variety is the spice of life, or in some ways, one of the secrets or tools to happiness, right?
Right.
I guess besides the obvious benefits of just feeling happier, what sort of other aspects of our working lives or home lives does kind of all of the research suggest is impacted by improving our levels of happiness? Like, what are some of the other benefits?
A lot of people think that happiness is something that sort of feels good, that happiness is about pleasure. But it turns out hundreds of studies now show that people who are happier also benefit in other areas of their life as well. And I should note that this research, a lot of it is correlational, but a lot of it is also longitudinal, which follows people across time, and some of it is experimental. So the causality goes both ways. So for example, researchers find that happier people have better relationships, right? They have more social support, they have more friends, they're more likely to get married, they're less likely to get divorced. And so the causal direction, of course, goes both ways. So if you have a lot of friends and if you're married, you're going to be happier than if you don't, but also happier people are more likely to find a person who wants to marry them. And if you look at longitudinal studies, and they're more likely to find friends. Happiness is not just about feeling good. If you're a happier person, your partners are going to benefit. Everyone, you know, we tend to like people who are happy a lot more than people who are unhappy or depressed. You're going to be healthier. Lots of research shows that happier people are healthier. They have stronger immune systems. They recover faster from surgeries. They live longer. And happy people are also more productive at work. They show more creativity. They're better leaders and negotiators. So yeah, so happiness also benefits, you know, other areas of your life.
Amazing. And Sonia, you've probably alluded to this next question in your answer there, but I wonder, what would you say to those individuals, particularly business leaders, who are still skeptical about focusing on happiness? Perhaps they think it's a little hokey, a little sort of apple pie, or in some way it's unbusinesslike to be talking about happiness in the work setting. What would you say to those people?
You know, basically what I just said earlier about how happiness, you know, when you're thinking about the happiness of your employees or the happiness of your clients or customers, that it's not just about making them feel good, right? So if you're workplace is a happier workplace. If your employees are happier, they're going to be more creative, right? They're going to be better organizational citizens. They're going to help each other more, maybe get more work done. I mean, literally studies show happier people sell more widgets. You know, they're more warm and, you know, they're just better to interact with. It's not just about sort of making people feel better.
And are there any particular approaches, strategies that sort of can be applied at an organizational level to boost and improve happiness?
Sure. So I mean, I'm an expert in individual happiness, right? And sort of how we get individuals to be happier. So certainly, I've worked with organizations that want to make their employees happier or their clients or customers happier. And so there's lots of, you know, sort of individual strategies that they can employ. They can sort of say, they can, I don't know, have meditation workshops or, you know, give guidelines for kind of practices that people can use in their daily lives. But also they can kind of do it at a organizational level in the sense of like leaders can be role models, right? So if a leader is more generous or more grateful, that could be kind of a, not only sort of a model for employees, but also can kind of trickle down in a way. And also those things can be contagious, right? So, and I'm not just talking about like the CEO, but sort of, you know, managers and supervisors, that if they're more grateful, they're more kind, if they're more social in a warm way, if they make people feel understood, that's going to be kind of sort of contagious to the people on their team. So I guess those are some of the thoughts that I have about increasing happiness in organizations.
So that's really interesting. I get that you've just helped me kind of make the link there, that like so many things is obvious when you suddenly realize it. But we know about emotional contagion, right? And I guess happiness is another state or another emotion. So you're absolutely right. If kind of leaders are really focusing on their own happiness and modeling the way through that emotional contagional effect, we know that that actually should start to trickle down and their teams will be happier. And you can, in theory, I guess, get this kind of huge cascade of happiness and positivity throughout the organization, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, happiness, like any emotion, is contagious. And if we believe, as studies show, that people are happier, are more creative and better negotiators, you know, and have stronger immune systems, then it's good to kind of have that contagion in the workplace.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a slightly left field question, and feel free to just kind of say you don't know or not answer it, but kind of is there any research or links already sort of emerging between happiness and COVID-19 and recovery rates? So just because you're chatting, I thought, wow, like you mentioned earlier, sort of immune systems. Is there anything emerging yet there?
Yeah, there actually is a lot. And it's not an off the wall question at all. It's something that lots of researchers are focused on. I'm actually, one of my students and I wrote a chapter for the World Happiness Report on the effects of COVID on social connection and well-being. And there's a paper that I happen to be on with lots of authors that just came out or is coming out on the effects of COVID on mental health around the world. Kind of the bottom line conclusion is about 70% of people around the world have done just fine, but 30% have not, right? So 30%, so 70% of people tend to be resilient, right? Two thirds or a little bit more tend to be fairly resilient, but 30% have not fared so well. And 10 to 15% of people around the world have really suffered in lots of ways, including sort of severe mental health kind of issues. And so that's kind of the bottom line.
Okay. And probably final question, Sonia, because I want to be respectful of your time. I know you said your expertise is really in individual happiness, but I wonder, is there any particular advice you would give to business leaders as we do hopefully around the world start to emerge from COVID? And I'm thinking particularly as we start to welcome people back into our physical places of work, and we're going through that transition. Is there anything in particular you think that leaders, organizations can be doing from a happiness perspective that will help make that a sort of as smooth a transition as possible?
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard. I feel like I'm not going to say anything that you and your listeners don't know, but I think flexibility is really important. You know, I just read a book by George Bonanno, who's a researcher who studies resilience, and it's called The End of Trauma. It's coming out soon. And basically he proposes something called the flexibility sequence, which is basically that there's flexibility is really important in, you know, responding, reacting, and kind of being showing resilience to adversity or trauma or kind of any kind of negative events or stresses. And so that can apply in different levels, right? So if leaders are flexible or kind of allow their employees to be flexible, whether it's flexibility in terms of the time that they can work, you know, the days and the times, and whether they have to be in person, you know, hybrid schedules, you know, everyone's talking about that now, but that can really help them, right, with adversities or difficulties, right? Whether there's illness in the family or, you know, things that they need to attend to at home, childcare. So that I think flexibility is really important. And, you know, and also, you know, understanding that, now with Zoom, right, we all kind of see inside people's like living rooms and bedrooms, and you can sort of see that they have lives and children and pets and noises outside their home, you know, construction, whatever. And that I think has been good, right? Sort of has been good for us all kind of to remember that our employees and colleagues sort of have lives. So again, I guess I feel like flexibility is important, sort of supporting mental health or just like recognizing that your employees are going to be more productive. They're going to be better for the bottom line of your company if they're happier, if their mental health problems are addressed, right? So, you know, I guess what I want to end on is the key to relationships, I think, is, and this is a theory by Harry Rees, who's at the University of Rochester, is that both people feel understood and feel cared for. And I think feeling understood is really maybe the most critical. And so how does a leader make their employees feel understood by them, right? That's really the key. And so one way is to ask questions, right? Is to really like show authentic interest in them. You know, it could be a survey or it could be actual, you know, in-person following up. You said that you had this issue, you know, how's that going, you know? And so I think when you feel understood, you'll also feel happier. You'll feel like you belong there, right? You're less likely to leave. You're going to be more productive.
That's so, so interesting, Sonia. That's just given me some of, I guess, of the research, the science, the theory behind an exercise that's been working really well. So listeners to the show might have heard me talk before about where I've been running some offsites with leadership teams, and I've opened by asking people to all sort of sit in a circle and share sort of their experience of the last 3, 5, 6 months, however long it's been since they were last physically together, and their hopes and concerns for the future. And that's normally been a really long exercise. I think the record was with a group of about 17, 3.5 hours, we were still going. But I could just physically see the level of comfort, connection in that team change as a result, right? And I guess it's what you just said around connection, feeling heard, understood, etc. That's been the difference.
That's fantastic. I agree. That sounds like that's what happened. Congratulations for that. I really like, the more I think about it, the more I think that making other people feel understood is really the key to relationships, and then connection is maybe the key to happiness. So yeah, that's wonderful.
Fabulous. Sonia, how can people find out more about your work or maybe connect with you if they want to?
Sure thing. I think probably, well, my website is sonialubomirsky.com, but you have to know how to spell my name. So maybe the easiest would be to just Google my book, The How of Happiness, and then you'll find my website or information about me. But that's sort of the easiest to remember, I guess.
Great. We'll stick your website in the show notes, folks, so you can just click on it straight from there as well.
Well, that'd be great. That'd be great. Thank you so much.
Sonia, thank you so much for making the time to join us today and for sharing your thoughts with the listeners. I certainly really appreciate your time, and I know they're going to really appreciate your time and wisdom as well. So thank you once again.
Thank you, Ben. And it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Some great questions today. Thank you.
I hope you found that conversation valuable, folks. But most importantly, I really hope that you're able to go away and make some small positive changes as a result. If you did get value from this episode, then please do rate, review, and subscribe via iTunes, as it really does enable us to keep bringing you more and more interviews with fantastic leaders and subject matter experts. Do also visit ben-morton.com, where you can connect with me, find out more about my leadership mentoring and team development work, along with details of all of my online programs via the tools and resources page. That's it for this episode. See you again in the next one very soon, and lead on.